Dracula by Bram Stoker. Jonathan Harker's journal, kept in shorthand. 3rd of May, Bistritz. Left Munich on 1st of May, travelling by train via Vienna and Budapest, en route to Transylvania. The district named by Count Dracula is in the extreme east of the country, in the midst of the Carpathian Mountains, one of the wildest and least known portions of Europe. I was not able to light on the exact locality of Castle Dracula, but I found that Bistritz, the post town named by Count Dracula, is fairly well known. It was twilight when we got to Bistritz. Count Dracula had directed me to go to the Golden Krone Hotel. I was evidently expected, for an elderly woman in peasant dress bowed as I came in and said, "The Herr Englishman?" "Yes," I said, "Jonathan Harker." She smiled and handed me a letter. "My friend, welcome to the Carpathians. I am anxiously expecting you. Sleep well tonight. At 3 tomorrow the diligence will start for Bukovina. A place on it is kept for you. At the Borgo Pass, my carriage will await you and will bring you to me. Your friend, Dracula." The 4th of May. This afternoon, before I was due to leave, the old lady came up to my room and said, in evident distress, "Oh, young Herr, do you know what you are going to? Must you go?" I told her that I was engaged on important business, that I must go. She then dried her eyes, and taking out a crucifix, fastened it round my neck. "For your mother's sake," she said. Then she left the room. Whether it is the old lady's fear, I do not know, but I am not feeling easy in my mind. 5th of May. The castle. When I got on the coach, I saw the driver talking with the landlady and some of the passengers. They were evidently talking of me, for every now and then they looked at me pityingly. This was not pleasant for me, just starting for an unknown place to meet an unknown man. Then our driver cracked his big whip over the four horses, and we set off on our journey. I soon lost myself in the beauty of the scene as we drove along. At length I could see a cleft in the hills, the Borgo Pass. As we flew along, the driver leaned forward, and on each side the passengers peered eagerly into the darkness. I was now myself looking out for the conveyance which was to take me to the Count, but there was no sign of a vehicle. The passengers drew back with a sigh of gladness. Turning to me, the driver said, "There is no carriage here. The Herr is not expected after all. He will now come on to Bukovina." Whilst he was speaking, a caleche with four coal-black horses drew up beside the coach. They were driven by a tall man with a long brown beard and a great black hat, which seemed to hide his face from us. I could only see the gleam of a pair of very bright eyes, which seemed red in the lamplight, as he said to the driver, "You are early tonight, my friend." The man stammered in reply, "The English Herr was in a hurry." "You cannot deceive me, my friend. I know too much." With exceeding alacrity, my bags were handed out and put in the caleche. Then the driver helped me down with a hand which caught my arm in a grip of steel. Without a word, he shook his reins, the horses turned, and we swept into the darkness of the pass. Soon we were hemmed in with trees. It grew colder and colder, and fine powdery snow began to fall. From the mountains on each side of us came the wild howling of wolves. I grew dreadfully afraid, but the driver was not in the least disturbed. We kept on ascending, until suddenly I became conscious of the fact that the driver was pulling up the horses in the courtyard of a vast ruined castle, whose broken battlements showed a jagged line against the now moonlit sky. When the caleche stopped, the driver jumped down and assisted me to alight. Then he took up my traps and placed them next to a great door set in a projecting doorway of carved stone. Then he jumped again into his seat and shook the reins, and trap and all disappeared down one of the dark openings. The time I waited seemed endless, and doubts and fears crowded upon me. Was this a customary incident in the life of a solicitor sent out to explain the purchase of a London estate to a foreigner? Suddenly, I heard heavy steps approaching behind the great door. There was the clanking of massive bolts drawn back. A key was turned with a loud grating noise, and the door swung open. Within stood a tall, old man with a long white moustache, clad in black from head to foot. His lamp threw out long, quivering shadows as it flickered in the draught of the open door. "Count Dracula?" I said. He bowed, and with an icy hand, grasped my own with a strength which made me wince. "I am Dracula. Welcome, Mr. Harker, to my house. Come in. The night air is chill, and you must need to eat and rest." So saying, he carried my traps along the passage, then up a great winding stair and along another great passage, on whose stone floor our steps rang heavily. At the end, he threw open a heavy door, and we entered a well-lit room in which a table was spread for supper, and on whose mighty stone hearth a great fire of logs flared. The Count opened another door and motioned me to enter. It was a welcome sight, a great bedroom, well lighted and warmed with another log fire. Leaving my luggage inside, he withdrew, saying, "You will need after your journey to refresh yourself. When you are ready, come into the other room where you will find your supper prepared." After making a hasty toilet, I went into the other room where I found supper already laid out. My host stood on one side of the great stone fireplace. "I pray you be seated and sup how you please. You will excuse me that I do not join you, but I have dined already." I fell to at once on an excellent roast chicken. During the time I was eating, the Count chatted with me about my journey, and I had the opportunity of observing him. I found him of a very marked physiognomy. His face was very strong, aquiline, with a thin nose and peculiarly arched nostrils. His forehead was lofty and domed. His eyebrows were bushy, and the mouth, under the heavy moustache, was fixed and cruel-looking. His teeth were peculiarly sharp and white, and protruded over lips of remarkable ruddiness. The general effect was one of extraordinary pallor. As the Count leaned over me, his hands touched me, and I shuddered. Abruptly he rose and said, "You must be tired. Tomorrow you shall sleep as late as you will. I have to be away till the afternoon, so sleep well." And with a courteous bow, he opened the door for me, and I entered my bedroom. I am all in a sea of wonders. God keep me, if only for the sake of my dear Mina. The 7th of May, I slept till late in the day. When I had dressed, I went next door and found breakfast laid out. There was a card on the table on which was written, "I have to be absent for a while. Do not wait for me. D." So I set to and enjoyed a hearty meal. When I finished, I looked about for something to read. Opening another door in the room, I found a sort of library containing a vast number of English books, whole shelves of them, all relating to England and English life and customs. Whilst I was looking at the books, the door opened and the Count entered. "I am glad you have found your way in here," he began. "These have been good friends to me ever since I had the idea of going to London. Through them I have come to know your great England." "But come," he said, taking a seat near the fire, "tell me of the house which you have procured for me." "It lies at Purfleet," I rejoined, "on a byroad. The estate is called Carfax. It is surrounded by a high stone wall which contains in all some 20 acres, with many trees, which make it in places gloomy. The house itself is large, dating back to medieval times, and communicates by a door with an old chapel or church. Without the walls, there are but few dwellings close at hand. One being a very large house, recently formed into a private lunatic asylum. When I had finished, he said, I'm glad that it is old and big. I myself am of an old family, and to live in a new house would kill me. I rejoice also that there is a chapel of old times. We Transylvanian nobles love not to think that our bones may be amongst the common dead. I seek not gaiety nor bright sunshine. I love the shade and the shadow, and would be alone with my thoughts when I may. Presently, with excuse, he left me. While he was away, I glanced at some of the books around me. One was an atlas, which I found opened at England. In certain places, little rings were marked. One was near London, on the east side, where his new estate was situated. Another was Whitby, on the Yorkshire coast. 8th of May. I only slept a few hours. When I got up, I had hung my shaving glass by the window and was just beginning to shave. Suddenly I felt a hand on my shoulder and heard the Count's voice saying, "Good morning." I started. It amazed me that I had not seen him, for the whole room behind me was displayed in the glass. In starting, I had cut myself slightly, and my cut had bled a little. When the Count saw it, his eyes blazed with a demoniac fury. Then his glance fell on the crucifix hanging at my throat. It made an instant change in him. "Take care how you cut yourself," he said. "It is more dangerous than you think in this country." Then he seized the shaving glass. "This is the wretched thing that has done the mischief. Away with it!" And opening the heavy window with one wrench of his terrible hand, he flung it out. Then he withdrew without a word. Afterwards, I did a little exploring in the castle. On the stairs, I found a window with a magnificent view. The castle is on the very edge of a precipice, 1,000 feet up. As far as the eye can reach is a sea of green treetops, with occasional deep rifts where rivers wind in gorges through the forests. I explored further. Doors everywhere, all locked and bolted. At length, I heard the great door below shut. The Count had returned. I went cautiously to my own room. When later I saw him through a chink in the door laying the table in the dining room, I was assured of what I had all along thought. There are no servants in the house. It must have been the Count himself who was the driver of the coach that brought me here. 12th of May. Last evening the Count said, "Have you written any letters?" I answered that I had not. "Then write now, my young friend," he said. "Write to whomever you choose. But I pray you, do not discourse of things other than business in your letters. It will doubtless please your friends to know that you are well. Is it not so?" As he spoke, he handed me notepaper and envelopes. I understood that I should be careful what I wrote, for he would be able to read it. So I determined to write only a formal note now, but to write fully to Mina in secret, and in shorthand, which would puzzle the Count if he did see it. When I had written my letter, the Count took it up and said, "I trust you will forgive me, but I have much work to do in private this evening." At the door he turned. "Let me advise you that should you leave these rooms, you will not sleep in any other part of the castle. Be warned. Sleep only in these rooms, or in your own chamber."